There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Good evening. You're listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap, and I'm Malcolm Taylor. In this hour, as global co-working space WeWork recoils from losing its IPO and CEO in the space of a week, we're asking whether the fad is fading. Plus, the Dubai Multi-Commodity Centre has upgraded its diamond trading floor just as they host the Dubai Diamond Conference. We're going to find out exactly what they've done to make it the largest in the world, and also asking what fake engine sound would you choose for your electric car. But first, as Cityscape concludes today, we're going to hear from one of the UAE's biggest developers, Nakheel.
Well, let's start with Cityscape. You are one of the biggest exhibitors down there this year. Tell us, how does it compare to Cityscape's past and present?
Yeah, I think it's been great. We've been doing this for years. Year after year, the event has evolved, especially in the last few years, where we see not only the format of the exhibition adapt to the changing needs of the industry, but also the types of visitors that come not only range from B2B and B2C visitors, but also B2G. You've got a lot of technology platform.
B2G being?
To governments, okay. and so on. For instance, Dubai Lands Department have an active role this year at Cityscape, where they've unveiled a lot of new initiatives, new platforms, new legislations, and so on. So it's been very refreshing. Obviously, things are different in a good way. I think the general sense is that it's a buyer's market. The visitors are asking the right questions. Those who've actually perhaps held back for the last few years, saved some money, were tentative on the fence, have now decided that, yes, let's make that investment that we've been waiting for, because there's so many options out there, not only in terms of pricing, but also in terms of the levels of luxury, locations, and the types of products.
We heard from Craig Plum of JLL at the start of the week, and he was in with the organisers from Cityscape, and the theme this year is adapting to change. But Craig said one of the things that hasn't changed is that it's still an oversupplied market in Dubai in particular. How are you reading the market at the moment?
Yeah, I think we've talked about that, I think, quite a bit this year in many ways. Yes, there's an oversupply, but I would probably steer away from generalizing it. So there are certain segments that are oversupplied, and there's a lot of them, but there are certain segments that were probably undersupplied. And last year, what had happened was there was a number of developers who introduced mid-market products that was missing from Dubai's offerings for many years. So I think it's balanced out. More signs of a maturing economy. In terms of oversupply, there's been pressure on prices, so that's sort of good and bad. So it's products are accessible to new customer bases because of the pricing pressure, but then you also have the counter effects of the yields, rental yields becoming also attractive as a result.
So people are coming in. What were you selling on your stand yesterday, and what will you be selling today and indeed tomorrow over the weekend?
So yes, we do sell product. We also showcase products, but we sell properties ranging from off-plan properties and ready properties as well. So to name a few examples, our off-plan products range from Palm Tower, luxury apartments at Palm Tower and the Palm Jumeirah, all the way to Dragon Towers, which is integrated to Dragon Mart and Dragon City on the other side of Dubai.
From a few hundred thousand dirhams up to several million.
That's right.
Well, what is your honest assessment of the market at the moment?
So the market right now would be, I think if I were to just in a nutshell describe, would be a maturing market. It is, I think, an expected state of the cycle that we're in. It's gone through several waves over the last few years. And today, we're at a stage where Dubai, as a city, has decided to position itself at a certain stage from an economic and competitive perspective. And the real estate sector's got to underpin that and speak the same language. So quality products rather than quantity becomes a philosophy for us.
If it's an expected part of a maturing cycle, that would be something that people perhaps could have predicted. Do you think that we've done a bad job? We as a sort of developers in Dubai have done a bad job in predicting the market and just kept building regardless of the signs being there?
No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you've got to remember that a big portion of the offering is from the private sector. And Dubai's door has always been open to the private sector, and they've got to compete. And basically, especially Nakheel, a lot of the products that we have are fruits of the private developers. So areas like Jumeirah Village, Al Farjan, a lot of those properties that we see, even though they may have a Nakheel crane on it, they actually belong to private developers. So absolutely. I mean, every private developer does his own business planning. The project's got to be feasible. And a lot of them make money, yes. There are external parameters, external factors that come into play. We expected something into 2019. We're plus or minus 10% off.
Akhil Kazim is the Chief Commercial Officer of Nakheel. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
Evening, I'm Malcolm from The Business Breakfast.
It's all anyone's been talking about. Brandy, you've been watching a video of a man watching a video of the launch, haven't you?
I have. My new Twitter addiction is the Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid, the Space Center. They're big on Twitter. If you're not following the MBR Space Center, then you really need to do so. Two videos I've been watching. One is of Sheikh Mohammed, the Dubai ruler, out in what looks to me a little bit like it could be Al Qudra. He's on his bicycle. He's got his bike helmet on. He's got his cycling gear on. But he's stopped cycling to watch the launch of a rocket on his mobile phone. And there's a really lovely video of him clearly taking great delight in seeing the first Emirati astronaut go into space. And then the other video is of the guys going through the hatch onto the actual International Space Station. That full video is up there on the MBR Space Center Twitter, of the guys floating through the hatch and being greeted by a grateful ISS team who I think are just really, really happy to have someone new to talk to.
This is, of course, Hazza Al Mansouri making history by becoming the first Emirati in space, the first Arab astronaut to set foot on the International Space Station. And our colleague Sanu Sharif from the ARNU Centre has made this special report.
Oleg Skripochka, Jessica Mir, Hazza Ali Al Mansouri leaping forth from Gagarin start on their way to the International Space Station.
After several months of intense training, the 35-year-old former military pilot lifted off from the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan along with two other astronauts. Their spacecraft reached the International Space Station at 11:42 p.m. UAE time, and after a series of checks, they opened the hatch to their new home at 2:12 this morning.
And there we see Hazza Ali Al Mansouri in the background, last but not least. All crew members now inside the Russian segment aboard the International Space Station.
In Dubai, a mammoth crowd gathered at the Mohammed bin Rashid Space Center to watch the landmark moment when Al Mansouri lifted off. Students, families, and space enthusiasts were among the thousands who came to witness a slice of history. And when the rocket blasted off, the venue erupted in applause and powerful emotion. These school children who watched the proceedings shared their thoughts with AR News.
We are inspired and we feel proud that we're from UAE watching such a great thing happening. Looking forward to see what hypothesis and conclusion comes up for the experiments that the students have given.
The successful launch marks an important milestone in the UAE space sector. On the International Space Station, Al Mansouri will participate in various scientific missions. And back on Earth, students will also get a chance to conduct some of those same experiments. Noura Al Rafi is the head of education of the UAE astronaut program.
Also excited to start the mission, to start all the education and outreach activities that we have planned together for Hazza Al Mansouri.
Al Mansouri will spend 8 days on the International Space Station before returning to Earth on the 3rd of October. I'm Sanud Sharif, reporting for the AR News Center.
That was Sanu Sharif from the ARN News Centre, a momentous occasion. I know you guys watched it on the NASA website, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We had a big bearded NASA scientist explaining things simply.
He's become a bit of a cult hero.
I've been trying to find him on the internet this morning. I've been Googling NASA space commentator, dude with beard at NASA. He hasn't turned up yet, but he was very, very good. Because, yes, after watching the entire thing, I felt like I actually understood what had fallen off when and why and what was going on.
He
and
really
I am no
simple,
space expert.
Yeah, he didn't use... big language, did he?
Do you know what he did let slip, which was quite delightful? Because the astronauts get to take a few personal items each. Not much, obviously, because fuel is expensive and space is at a premium. But Hazza apparently, according to bearded NASA guy, has taken a small plush camel that his children have given him.
Oh, that's nice, isn't
that's
it?
That's very
Which
cute.
Is quite normal. One of the other astronauts, I can't remember if it was the Russian bloke or the American woman, also had a tiny, because they're light, aren't they? A tiny stuffed animal that didn't weigh very much that had been given by their children as well.
You're very good at getting sort of surveys that tell you what people take out of hotel rooms when they leave. I wonder if there's a survey that tells you the most commonly stolen things from the space station when people leave there.
Oh, you'd take a souvenir, but you'd want to be a bit careful, wouldn't you? Nothing that would spring a leak.
Hang on, that knob. We need that knob.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's a lot of cameras in there, aren't there?
There are.
The one thing that jumped out at me about this is I was watching it just expecting to watch it go up, but I was really nervous and quite involved with it. My blood pressure, my heart rate certainly picked up about 10 minutes before the thing. And then as it went off, and I was thinking, my God, you suddenly realise that this is a live launch and things can go wrong. But fortunately they didn't, and fortunately it was a really nicely executed launch. It looked brilliant.
Oh, yeah, I was glued to it for about 50 minutes, all of the warm-up, the whole thing.
Also talking co-working spaces, following the challenges at WeWork. Within the past week, they've lost their CEO and their IPO has been abandoned. We're asking, has the fad for co-working spaces maybe fizzled out a little bit? Well, not so, says a new report from CBRE, one of the big retail real estate consultancies. Here in the UAE and the GCC, they say it is growing very, very fast, from a small base, and they expect that to continue. We've been speaking with Gabriella De La Torre, who heads up strategic advisory at CBRE in this part of the world. And we began by asking almost for a definition. We've had serviced offices here for a long time, a long tradition of those. We asked her, how is it different?
You'll see within our report a list of different operators which have sprung up over the past years. Servcor and Regus are the largest in terms of their history in the region, but like you said, they're more service office type of offering, although they are expanding into innovative types of co-working, more flexible, more entrepreneurial, different type of atmosphere. But we are seeing other types of operators such as Let's Work and Witwork, which don't have physical spaces themselves, but enable the community to access different types of existing spaces. So whether that's hotel lounges or, let's say, retrofitted warehouses, people can essentially choose where they want to work on any given day within the UAE.
And we asked her who are the main customers for these co-working spaces. Is it your startup, your one-man band freelancer entrepreneur, or, as in London, big corporations like HSBC?
I think we're starting to see a shift, definitely. And so that's something that's really increasingly demanded, particularly by millennials in terms of choosing where they work. And so I think something that we'll see more often than not is among these, let's say, more traditional corporates, what they will allow their employees to do increasingly is work near home. So rather than going to a central location to work, which would be your traditional office space, they might have specific outposts around different parts of the city that enable people to plug in to, let's say, a well-developed infrastructure that facilitates their work, but is more adapted to their lifestyle and to their locations.
Situation on the ground here in the UAE is that we have a number of startup co-working spaces. One of them is called Nook. It's in Jumeirah Lake Towers in DMCC. Ravi Basari is the co-founder and CEO. Now, he also set up about 10 years ago the company Duplays, which organises sports activities across the region. And Nook is specifically focused on sporting startups and sporting companies. And we asked him, is the fad fizzling out?
No, I don't think it's fizzling out. I think the idea that people need more agile, flexible spaces to work from, whether that's serviced office on shorter leases or kind of this entrepreneurial kind of co-working vibe, is still needed. I think especially here, entrepreneurs, especially startups, are looking to kind of reduce their startup costs. So when you can rent a desk with an Ajari, have a more discounted trade license, which we've managed to negotiate on behalf of our tenants at Nook in the DMCC, then there's always going to be demand for that, right? People want to kind of limit their costs when starting a new business, whether it's here in Dubai or elsewhere.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Good evening. You're listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap. I'm Malcolm Taylor. The fourth Dubai Diamond Conference takes place today, courtesy of the DMCC and the DDE, the Dubai Diamond Exchange. It's a sold-out event, hosting 400 sparkling lights from the diamond world globally. And Sanjeev Dutta joins us now, Executive Director Commodities at the Dubai Multi-Commodity Centre. Thank you very much indeed for coming in. Dubai is the second biggest diamond trading centre after Antwerp. I knew it was up there. I didn't realise it was number two. It's fitting that the conference is here. year. What is the theme this year?
This is the fourth edition, as you've just mentioned, and the theme is Disruption in Diamonds, Harnessing Innovation and Technology for Positive Change. Now, that's a very interesting tagline we've had this year, because we believe that the industry is going through a very interesting phase, and disruption through innovation and the technology associated with such innovation is so important.
Well, I mean, innovation, challenges, disruption, you mentioned there. The industry is challenged at the moment. Millennials apparently would rather get married on a beach in Bali than have a traditional wedding with a gold ring and diamond. How big an issue is this? And the new generations are not buying diamonds as much.
Well, you know, it's according to me, it's always a changing phenomenon over certain times. And the fact that the millennials behave the way they do never takes the sparkle away from diamonds, which are a woman's best friend. And obviously, we believe that this industry has a lot of opportunity, and there are only things to be done to better underline the fact that the diamond is a good investment and an investment which stays.
Is it a good investment? What is the average return on a diamond if you sell it, say, 5 or 10 years later?
Well, it's not only in terms of the commercials that you're looking at, but also the fact that you're holding onto an asset, which will certainly add value. But
an asset is only an asset if it does make you money or holds value, doesn't
it?
I mean,
yes.
And what are the resale values for diamonds like? I mean, are you going to make a profit on it or not?
Well, it depends on the kind of stone you're holding. And certainly, yes, if it's conspicuous, why not?
Richard, what do you think on this? I mean, would you hold a diamond as an asset?
Potentially. I mean, I've never been a big one for investing in jewellery and gold as well. But just hearing you ask that question, it reminded me that 20 years ago, when I was first here, interviewing someone from the World Gold Council and saying, oh, gold is shot as an asset class. Young people don't want to buy gold now. They want to buy. Yeah. And then it was iPods and handbags instead. And here we are with gold at, what, $1,500, $1,600 an ounce.
It's a generational thing, but it's also, as far as the bona fide diamond industry is concerned, it's to do with synthetics as well. Martin Rappaport, editor of the Diamond Industry's Voice Rappaport Diamond Report, says that millennials don't have the same stigma about buying synthetic diamonds, and that puts further downward pressure on the price because they're very happy buying these, you know, high-pressure, high-temperature diamonds that have been made in laboratories rather than under the ground.
Well, I mean, if you look at a comparison between the lab-grown and diamonds per se, they're two different asset classes altogether, and it's always very good not to try and mix the two. So one is a proper asset, which is mined naturally, whereas the other is lab-grown. The two do not speak to one another when it comes to holding value. So when they're two different asset classes, it's good to leave them where they are. But having said that, as far as transparency is concerned, you know, DDE would host a lab-grown diamond tender as well, as long as it's very clearly mentioned that it is a lab-grown.
How easy is it for experts to tell the difference?
The experts can.
What I'm really doing is saying that there's going to be a very interesting discussion down there covering these sort of things. I was at the Dubai Diamond Exchange earlier in the year for a report, but you've upgraded the trading facilities since then as well. What does the new trading floor allow you to do?
Well, it's awesome. And 41 rooms, the largest facility in the world. Not only can you have the best-in-class infrastructure while ensuring it's a secure environment. But we've also changed the window panes for the building.
Which is important because these are diamond tenders and people look at the...
Yes, it's not only for diamonds, but we want to cascade it to other precious gems as well. So that's going to be a very unique proposition for the Dubai Diamond Exchange.
So what other stones are you looking at?
Any stone.
Emeralds.
Which finds... Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Everything.
And that's something which drew a lot of interest yesterday during the inauguration.
Is there, I mean, the same way that, you know, we're number two now to Antwerp, and there are other big trading centres for diamonds around the world. Do emeralds have a place to be traded? Rubies have a different place? I mean,
well, nothing as unique as the Dubai Diamond Exchange. Yeah. Nothing.
How is the industry coping with the challenge of VAT? I know a number of senior members of Dubai's diamond community have commented on the impact that VAT has had. So a two-part question. What is the status of VAT on diamonds, either retail or wholesale, at the moment? And what impact over, well, it's been nearly 2 years now, have we seen on the industry?
DMCC has played a very active role in liaising with the several government authorities, and we've been successful in removing VAT from diamond and gold trading and continue to work with the UAE government to our business environment. So for rough, there is no VAT, and for polished, there is. But you see, Dubai is the place for rough, and the polishing market is in India, which again is so connected to Dubai now with the introduction of the direct flights from Surat.
Sanjeev Datta is Executive Director of Commodities at the Dubai Multi-Commodities Centre, DMCC. Pleasure to see you again, and thanks for coming
Thanks.
In.
Thanks again.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
Good evening. You're listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap. I am Malcolm Taylor. A few weeks ago, we talked about the UK saying that any electric car, because it doesn't make a noise, when it's travelling at less than 30 miles an hour in a built-up area, will have to make a noise. You have to input a noise to it to try and warn people at zebra crossings and just to keep pedestrians aware that there are things coming.
Now, you're going to need to make a noise when you're going slowly, but not when you're driving at 120 kilometres an hour.
Well, I guess you're not going to be too near pedestrians when you're moving at that. You're going to be on motorways, you're going to be in faster roads, but in town you can understand. And also, of course, for people that are hard of seeing or whatever else. So now the US National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has chimed in as well, saying that motorists in electric car will be able to not only have a manufacturer-imposed engine noise, one that's chosen by the manufacturer, and perhaps a suite of three or four noises, they'll be able to choose their own.
You'll custom, be able to choose like your own, a ringtone.
Exactly like a ringtone. So, you know, with wondering what yours is. Is it going to be music? Is it a theme tune? Is it sound effect? There's a couple of things that jump out at me. The range of sound that you're going to hear. And the other thing, isn't it going to make living in an urban area an absolute nightmare? Can you imagine a cacophony of sound?
How
when you
loud
go,
does it have
well,
to be?
I don't know. I mean, this is my first choice. Have a listen to this. This is what I think I'm going to go for first.
The quo.
Status quo, down, down. If you can imagine, multiply that by 100 cars going past your house every day. What about yourself? I mean, have you any thoughts on this one, Rich or Brandis?
Brandy has.
Oh, yeah, mine's easy.
Ice cream truck.
Yep, totally.
So that's your new sideline, is it?
Yep.
You'll be driving slowly in an ice cream cup.
I will. I will make a little bit of cash on the side.
There was mention earlier of the hacker. What happened to that? Did you decide that you didn't want to be a hacker?
I would rather be an ice cream truck.
Richard, what are you?
I'm going for this.
Oh, can you imagine that in your neighbourhood?
That's TIE Fighters.
It's not Star Wars.
No, it's not Formula 1, it's TIE Fighters from Star Wars. Oh, and possibly with a bit of this mixed in as well.
Yeah,
Darth
that's
Vader's
very,
Imperial March.
Yeah, I think my second one is also a theme to a film.
Oh, the Durango's coming. Oh, watch out, children.
Approaching the zebra crossing now. I'll get you.
But you've got an entire compilation album, haven't you? I think this might be a sideline for Malcolm. He's going to get into creating noises. This is another one of Malcolm's. This is possibly my favourite.
I don't know, but if you can imagine.
But if you've got a self-driving silver horse.
I go silver. Yes, I don't know. I mean, but if you're allowed to choose your own ringtone, as it were, for your car, can you imagine the noise?
Messages already coming in. Thanks very much indeed. Someone says he wants the humming of a no name on it, humming of a Lamborghini for my Tesla, please.
Yeah.
Dax is with Brandy wanting the ice cream truck. Philip as well. There's a lot of votes for the ice cream truck. We haven't asked you to vote, but people are anyway.
Yeah, somebody else says I'm going to use the sound of a train engine. That would keep you off the road, wouldn't it? Yeah.
If Malcolm's in a really, really, really bad mood, he's going to use this. How How can you drive slowly to
Lemmy?
That?
Yeah, Lemmy and Motorhead. You wouldn't, would you? That's the problem. This is the problem. I mean, if your car's making that little noise, I mean, it's gonna puff you up, isn't it? Make you drive in a different way.
Chris is saying he doesn't think music will be allowed. It has to be more engine-related sound effects.
Well, I think the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration saying that you can select the sound that you prefer from the set of sounds installed in the vehicle, and the vehicle sounds themselves may not be music, but they're suggesting that music will be allowed, which would make it interesting. Knight Rider theme, that's another one. Yeah. Thanks for listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap. We're back Sunday, 6 a.m. with the Business Breakfast Breakfast.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.